upholding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. We're included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. Greetings and good day from Technocracy News and Trends. I'm Patrick Wood, Editor-in-Chief, and today I'm going to start out by pointing out that the 5G Crisis Awareness and Accountability Summit has gone live and is underway right now. You can find your way to the 5G Crisis Summit by going to technocracy.news. There's a big red banner in the top of the screen that has an attend button on it. And if you click that, it will take you there. My presentation on 5G is live today, and you can hear it for free all week long. So if you're interested in 5G to learn everything there is to know about it, including some things you probably didn't want to know about it, but it's all there. There's, I think, 48 speakers are giving presentations. I was chosen to be one of the keynotes. You are welcome to go there and hear it for free. You just have to sign up, I think, put your email address in, and they'll give you immediate access to hear my speech as well as others. So there's a resource available to you. Today, the first story we're going to look at has to do with Philadelphia. And Philadelphia has made the big decision to go smart. It's a big city, you realize. And they have 100,000 streetlights in the city of Philadelphia, and you think, that is amazing. That's a lot of streetlights, 100,000 old-fashioned streetlights, I might add. But they're going smart, and they're making a commitment to install 100,000 smart streetlights. That is the ones that have all the fancy gear in them. They're Wi-Fi enabled, and you can put cameras on them and microphones and loud noise sensors and things like that to make the city truly smart. And of course, they'll transmit the information from each pole back real time to a centralized HQ. I wrote in this article, all 100,000 of Philadelphia's streetlights will be replaced with Wi-Fi enabled poles capable of total surveillance. It will be mostly financed by energy savings of LEDs over the high pressure sodium bulbs that they currently have. And so this article, which comes from Philadelphia, it notes that Philadelphia was the first city in America with public streetlights, thanks to Ben Franklin's introduction of the oil candle in colonial times. But the city has been a little slower than others to switch its public streetlights to modern energy-saving LEDs, mostly because the conversion costs are high, and indeed they are high. So what they're trying to work out is paying for all those new streetlights with cost savings by using the LED portion of these bulbs to light the streets. But they will be controlled via Wi-Fi, each one individually, from a central HQ. Now, this article goes on for a long time talking about the benefits of LED lights. Of course, everybody knows you save a lot of energy when you run an LED light bulb. They don't tend to burn out like regular bulbs, and they're very efficient in a lot of ways. So the article doesn't get interesting until you get way down into the article and you see what's really on their mind. So I put this paragraph at the very top in my comments. Buried at the bottom of this story is the following paragraph, quote, the switchover to a smart LED lighting system controlled through a wireless mesh network also opens the possibility that the devices could provide more than illumination, but an interconnected system of security cameras, air quality monitors, traffic and pedestrian counters, or acoustic gunshot detectors. The city manager notes, the more bells and whistles you put in there, the more it costs. Well, that's certainly true. But Philadelphia is setting themselves up with a platform that will be able, if they choose to implement total surveillance in the city, replete with cameras, microphones, loud noise sensors, etc. Will this help the Philadelphia Eagles to win more football games this year? Probably not, but at least the people getting to the games will be able to bask in the LED lights and have their picture taken at the same time. Well, the next story is back to Google again. We've covered in the pages of Technocracy News and Trends Google's activities up in Toronto, Canada, where they have embarked on establishing a smart city, or at least an area of a city up there to be a smart mini city, called Quayside. And Quayside has had its share of problems ever since it started. It's kind of a crazy city design, but citizens and privacy advocates alike have risen up against Quayside and said, guys, you've gone too far. You're collecting information on everybody and everything in between, and you just can't do this. That hasn't really stopped Quayside from moving forward, but there's been a few resignations at the city level along the way, and the citizens up there are still hopping up and down that they don't want anything to do with Quayside. But Google is taking off in a different direction in San Jose, California. And not just San Jose, but in downtown San Jose. And this title reads, Google launches new smart city project in downtown San Jose. And I even put a map up, their map, of what it's going to look like or what the boundaries of the area are. The article starts out, it says, years after it began fueling speculation by buying up huge swaths of property near Diridon Station, Google has provided the first peek at what the search giant hopes will be a vibrant, mixed-use community woven into the fabric of the city's urban heart. At a widely anticipated community meeting Thursday evening, the tech giant unveiled a design for a mile-long stretch of formerly industrial land west of Highway 87 that includes thousands of new homes, offices, public plazas, art, cultural space, and at least one hotel. The proposal promises to transform a rundown section of the city and comes as a marked shift from the walled-off corporate tech campuses that have dominated the South Bay for decades. It's not your grandfather's tilt-up suburban Silicon Valley office building, said Mayor Sam Liccardo. Google chose this part of San Jose in large part because of Diridon Station, which in the coming years is set to become one of the largest transit hubs on the West Coast, with BART, Caltrain, bus service, and perhaps even high-speed rail, all servicing the terminal. But in Google's vision, riders will emerge from the station not into the current drab expanse of flat parking lots, but into a bustling plaza lined with new office buildings anchored by cafes and shops on the ground floor to draw people in. While the company has not yet released renderings of the project, the images released Thursday provide the clearest picture yet of what Google is imagining. Across from the southwest corner of the SAP Center, Google wants to create some housing, an apparent nod to advocates who called for homes to be located near the station. Northwest of the Shark Tank, Google has plans for a hotel. That, in part, is meant to counter major conversion of housing in the area into short-term rentals through something like Airbnb. Alexa Arena, Google's director of real estate development, likened Google's vision to the company's modern, pedestrian-friendly King's Cross project in central London, adjacent to the famed St. Pancras train station that whisked riders across the English Channel to Paris and beyond. Both Google workers and San Jose residents alike, she said, want to emerge from the station directly into a vibrant city. And she insisted, Google wants to build a space that retains a diverse, unique San Jose feel. To the north, the company wants to preserve some industrial character with space for artists to be creative. To the south, Google's design focuses more on local retail and connecting with nature, creating and updating pathways near the Los Gatos Creek. Housing and office space would be incorporated on both sides. The space shouldn't have any hard edges, Arena told the news organization, noting that while San Jose recently voted to allow much taller buildings near Dearden Station, Google doesn't plan to build high in the sky anywhere. In some spots, Arena said, shorter structures might be more appealing than towers near residential neighborhoods with single-family homes, for instance. Overall, the company plans to create an estimated 6.5 million square feet of office space and 3,000 to 5,000 homes, well beyond what the city had anticipated for the area. Google also wants to set aside 500,000 square feet for retail, restaurants, culture, arts, education, and other uses to help create an active place that would attract people at night and on weekends. San Jose has a serious housing crisis and also a serious job deficit, Wallace said. So I'm really excited about Google taking significant steps to address both of those twin challenges. And isn't everybody just thrilled that Google is going to build some more housing in downtown San Jose? You can bet, number one, this will not be low-income housing at all, even though there will be new units. The people that can afford those units are likely receiving high income, and that will pretty much automatically exclude anybody that's outside of that working class of people. So Google tried it up in Quayside in Toronto, and now they're going to do it as an experiment from the ground up in downtown San Jose. And oh, by the way, did they mention that it was going to be a completely smart city with sensors and fiber optic cable and all the latest bells and whistles for monitoring and surveilling everything that moves? Well, that's another story. We'll watch Google. As they progress with this, we'll make sure that we cover more in the pages of Technocracy News and Trends. The last article today is titled, Digital Slavery, 5G, Internet of Things, and Artificial Intelligence. I wrote this article specifically to support my presentation on the 5G Crisis Awareness and Accountability Summit, which I mentioned earlier is up live today, in fact, all week. And you can go to technocracy.news and click on the banner at the top of the page if you want to listen. I highly encourage that you do. You may not like all the speakers and you may not like some of the material, but there has never before in the history of the world been so much information been focused on 5G specifically. So if you want to know about 5G, this is the place to go. So I wrote this article, as I said, to support that presentation. My editor comments at the top are the technocrats' lust for 5G and Internet of Things is so strong that they are perfectly willing to ignore all human concerns, protests, and especially health concerns. However, the issue of scientific dictatorship, aka technocracy, is much greater. I'll share this article with you now that's getting quite a bit of exposure around the world. I wrote, technocracy was originally defined as the science of social engineering, the scientific operation of the entire social mechanism to produce and distribute goods and services to the entire population. That came from the Technocrat magazine, 1938. Planted as a seed in 1932, technocracy has grown into a tree so big that it literally covers the earth today. That is, through the rebranding and repurposing by the United Nations as Sustainable Development Agenda 21, 2030 Agenda, New Urban Agenda, etc. Furthermore, it is like a hydra-headed monster with many tentacles and expressions. But we must never lose sight of the common purpose of all, kill the world's economic system of capitalism and free enterprise and replace it with the vacuous economic system, sustainable development. Since technocracy is a resource-based economic system, people like you and I are considered as mere resources on the same level as cattle and livestock on a ranch. If people are just animals who selfishly consume resources, then they must be monitored, managed, and limited in their consumption. To this end, technocracy originally called for the total surveillance of all people, all consumption, all production, and all energy consumed in every activity. The outcome was to control all consumption and production. This level of technology didn't exist in 1932. But it does today. When the surveillance network in America and the world is finally functional, the command and control system will become reality, resulting in a scientific dictatorship that exceeds even Orwell's 1984 and Huxley's Brave New World. What is the last cog in the gearbox necessary to bring this about? In short, 5G. Why? When you consider the massive amount of data that is waiting to be collected from the widespread Internet of Things, facial recognition cameras, smart city sensors, self-driving vehicles, etc., they all lack one element: real-time connectivity. And 5G solves this problem. If you listen to any 2019 speech given by the CEO of Verizon, T-Mobile, or AT&T, you will hear them rave over how 5G's real-time connectivity is going to light up the Internet of Things like a Macy's Christmas tree. You will hear the words transformative and disruptive over and over. What's the big deal with real-time connectivity? Well, artificial intelligence, or AI. It is said that AI without data is as inert and useless as a pile of rocks. AI needs data to learn and then to take action. Up until now, technocrats who create AI programs have had to use historical data for learning, and that's about all. Forever learning, but never doing. The holy grail of technocrats is to use their AI on real-time data. Real-time analysis can then close the control loop by feeding back real-time adjustments. This has never been done in the history of the world. But thanks to 5G, technocrats everywhere are salivating to dive into the control business. That is, the scientific operation of the entire social mechanism. Let me give you an example. Say you are an engineer and you designed and built a state-of-the-art fire truck that will revolutionize firefighting. There it sits on display for everyone to see. You start the engine, and everyone is duly impressed, but still, it just sits there. Without water, i.e. the data, to pump through the numerous hoses, everyone, including yourself, can only imagine what it would be like. In fact, your engineering dream is quite useless until you take it to an actual real-time fire and blast away with the water cannons to douse the flames. Then you will know if you were successful or not. Well, technocrats understand this. They know that 5G will fully enable their AI inventions and dreams. Unfortunately for us, they also know that it will enable the feedback loop to control the objects of surveillance, namely us. The technocrats' lust for 5G and the Internet of Things is so strong that they are perfectly willing to ignore all human concerns, protests, and especially health concerns. Perhaps now you can understand how and why they are living out the old nautical phrase, "Damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead." Risks don't matter. Danger doesn't matter. Collateral damage doesn't matter. To the extent that we citizens can nullify the rollout and implementation of 5G, we will scuttle the technocrats' ability to establish a scientific dictatorship. Truly, it is we who should be mounting the counterattack with our own cry of "Damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead." Again, I remind you, the link to get to the 5G Crisis Summit webpage is at the top of technocracy.news. Please take a venture, click on it, and go there and share it with people you know that also need to know about 5G. I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. We'll see you next time.